Okay. Today is January 13th, 2012, and I'm Amna Ahmad from the Brooklyn Historical Society. We are here in my home in Bay Ridge interviewing for the Crossing Borders Bridging Generations project. This interview is starting at around 2:45. So now would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Alexander David. I'm mixed race. I was born and raised in Park Slope, Brooklyn. And I guess this is my story.
Right. So could you tell me about your date of birth?
I was born in Hackensack, New Jersey. Quickly came back to Park Slope, so we don't need to talk about New Jersey part.
Very nice. Yeah. So would you be able to tell me a little bit about where you come from?
I mean, I come from Park Slope, Brooklyn, which is a very white neighborhood, I have to say. A lot of professionals around there. And it's actually very much like a closed community, almost. I remember I've talked to people about this. They get the same feeling. It's just like Park Slope has everything in it that you could ever need, really. You've got your stores, your shopping, anything, really. And so that's kind of been Park Slope for me. Though I always got out a little. But it was a nice place to be.
So do you feel like you're very close to the people around you in your neighborhood? Or
I mean, I know a fair amount of people there, and I do hang out. But I got to say that actually when I came to Stuyvesant, I kind of lost contact with a lot of my friends in Park Slope. A lot of my friends now actually are in Bay Ridge, parts of Manhattan, all over the city, really. But not so much in Park Slope, actually. Because, the big separating point for me was that I kind of went to athletics. Mm-hmm. And in Park Slope, the athletics are not very good. I can tell say that. And I still played with some of the guys at Park Slope, but playing high school ball is it's more like brothers with those guys on the team than like even like friends, really.
So which teams were you involved in while you were at Stuyvesant High
School? I was on the football team and the baseball team.
Football and baseball.
Which was pretty fun, actually, going on the mixed heritage thing. The baseball team was very white, and the football team was not as much at all. So, which is an interesting contrast. And also, I was the only one in my year, actually, on both teams, mm-hmm. which the year before me, there were at least two or three who were on both teams, and the year after me, there were at least two or three. Mm-hmm. So that was a nice, interesting twist. Nobody else, for some reason, was on both teams.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about what it was like to be on the football team or the baseball team, whichever one you'd prefer to speak about first?
I guess football, since that was the one that I started with. Actually, the summer before freshman year, I came to practices where I actually met James Morrissey, which I guess is going to work into the rest of this because he's really the reason I'm doing all this in the first place. But I got to say, it teaches you a lot of things. It gets you in shape, gets you committed to doing something, and it really teaches you have to like put in the work mm-hmm. if you want to do anything, especially on a team that it was our first actually winning record that year in a while, and so we were coming in with like we have a lot to prove. So just coming into that kind of atmosphere to begin with really makes you a part of the team because they needed everybody to really put in everything you had, which was good. And I guess later was the baseball team, which for the first time, it actually came as a shock to me because, as I said, Park Slope, the sports aren't too good, so I always thought I was really good. And then I was playing with guys who were actually really good, and then I realized, like, oh, I really didn't learn anything I needed to for baseball. And so all of a sudden, I had to start learning all these things that I thought I knew, which was tough. But also, like, you know, coming from the football, I think really helped out with just sticking with it and just like, okay, you know, I'm not where I was, but I'm going to get there. Like, I'm not where I thought I was going to be. And so it was a lot of fun, too, yeah. Which was good.
So do you remember your first, you know, your first game, maybe your first practice, what it was like to begin?
Yeah, actually. My first football practice, I was really out of shape. And I actually was, like, the last one by the end of the practice to complete any of the laps, to just do any of the running. I was just dying there in the field, and I just couldn't believe it. I thought I was in pretty good shape. And then I realized, like, no. This isn't good.
Mm. And so what was the experience like with getting to know the other players on the team and integrating yourself into something? I think you described it as a brotherhood before the interview.
Yeah. It's kind of like an experience that you can't really have with anyone who hasn't done it before. Mm. And I can feel it sometimes where, like, you know, you have friends and you can be really good friends, but it's not exactly the same kind of like connection you have with someone who you were, you know, there out on the field with every day, kind of grinding. And just like, it's because it's you guys against everyone else. It comes down to that. And we actually hit with, for football, have like this one moment our senior years where we come out and we just say everything that what the team's meant to us. And I mean, it's been life changing for some of these kids on the team. Like, it really has. It keeps them from, like, you know, it keeps them out of trouble for some of these people. And it's just been spectacular to share the experience with these kids.
It's really great.
Yeah, it was just fantastic.
So did you find that it kept you out of trouble, or?
I don't know. I really wasn't going to get into a lot of trouble at the beginning. So for me, it was like, it was good though. I liked it, but I came from Mark Twain Middle School, and so, you know, strange, and going to Stuyvesant, it was always like a bit of a nerd, you know, and I had a girlfriend at the time, so I really wasn't going to, my life was fairly structured, so I wasn't really getting into any trouble, because it was like football, homework, girlfriend, just all, those were the big three things in my life, and like that was really taking over everything, so lucky me, I got to stay out of trouble for at least a while.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So it sounds like, well, Mark Twain is a very demanding school, as is Stuyvesant, but a lot of students experience an interesting transition between junior high school and high school in general, like, I guess in addition to, like, sports, which you've already described. So would you be able to describe, you know, what that transition was like for you?
Yeah, that transition for me actually wasn't there the way it was for, imagine, everyone else. Mark Twain, I think, is one of the biggest feeder schools to all the specialized high schools, with something like 400 and something kids out of our total 480 or less made it to a specialized high school of some kind.
Wow.
So actually, the huge transition for me was going from elementary school to middle school. That for me was just like a kick in the teeth. And because in elementary school where I went to, I was just so used to be having everything like just come to me. It's like, this is easy, you know, like you're one of the smart kids, you get everything done, you know, you don't have to put in any work. And then all of a sudden you get to Mark Twain where everyone around you is like pretty smart and all the teachers know it, so they're giving you work. And all of a sudden I'm like flailing around, I'm trying to get things done, I'm trying to get my work done, I just can't do it. And actually my first year there was really bad. And then eventually, you know, I'm pretty smart, I was quick enough, I got back on track and I was getting all my good grades. And then I came to Stuyvesant, and I realized how well Mark Twain had prepared me for Stuyvesant. And I get in my first year, it was actually my best year at Stuy. I had like a 96 point something average there.
Wow.
And like, even with all this other stuff I was doing, I'm like, you know, this isn't too bad. You know, everyone else is like talking about Stuyvesant. It's like, oh, they didn't go to Mark Twain. You know, which is kind of the same thing you have going from Stuyvesant somewhere else. It's like, oh, you didn't come from Stuyvesant. You don't really understand what's going on. But they eventually do. And it's like, Stuy picked up, especially my junior year. I had to start working again, which was, which wasn't pleasant.
Yeah, definitely.
That.
So what about the transition socially from either, you know, middle school to high school, or elementary to middle school, whichever one you prefer speaking about?
Well, socially from elementary school to middle school was very static. A lot of my friends who were also fairly smart came from elementary school to Mark Twain with me. And then from middle school to high school is when it kind of changed, because they all went to Brooklyn Tech mostly, and I was the only one who went to Stuyvesant. And, you know, thinking back, I was always like, oh, I should have gone to Brooklyn Tech, it's closer, my friends are there. But, you know, I came to meet a lot of people at Stuyvesant. I don't think I really would have, I probably would have met similar people, I guess, at Tech, but even talking with my friends, I you know, started connecting with them again. It was definitely a different experience there than it would be at Stuyvesant. And, you know, I think I enjoyed it, though. I made a lot of good friends at Stuyvesant, which was good.
So do you remember your first impression of the school when you first entered, or maybe when you first got in, went to the open house, you know?
First impression of Stuyvesant. My first impression was really with the football team, though, because I had gone beforehand with the team practicing. I'd already been in the school several times, working out, seeing the school. And it seemed big. You know, especially, you probably remember the 7th to 9th floor escalator.
Yes.
That was very big, and I remember seeing that a few times, and I was just like, wow, this school, there's a lot to it. And everyone's telling me, oh, you're going to have 1st floor to 10th floor, and you're going to have freshman book bag, all this stuff. And what else? There's, like, the other thing was that, just trying to remember the social thing I was going to say about it. But what was it? It's actually really hard to remember this. I'm trying to, my first impression, socially at least, of the people at Stuyvesant was, I guess, not as nerdy as people make it out to be. But then I wasn't really in more nerdy social circles. And I kind of know they were there by the end of my time at Stuyvesant. I realized that there were like these groups of kids that were doing things that I just had no interest in, and that's why I'd never met them, never dealt with them. And so to me, like, my experience at Stuyvesant was probably very much different from theirs. Mm-hmm. And it's just there at the end with like senior year and all this free time, and I'd kind of like gone back to some of my more like nerdy roots, and I was just like playing Super Smash Brothers Melee in my free periods by the second floor down at the hall, because I think we weren't supposed to have it or whatever it was. Yeah. I was just playing it because like I had nothing else to do. Some of the people were like cutting class or not cutting class, or you know, sneaking out, doing whatever they were doing, and I'm just like, you know, I'm just gonna sit down and just play some Melee. And I realized like these kids, like I'd never seen them before. It's like, oh well, you know, these are the guys at Stuy that actually represent Stuy much more than I do, mm-hmm. which I thought was pretty interesting.
So why do you say that they represent Stuy more than you do?
Well, because that's what everyone knows about Stuy. You know, it's like, you go to Stuy, it's like 70% Asian now. And, you know, it's known for having, like, tons and tons of kids going to all these amazing colleges and just having these ridiculous averages, you know, not sleeping, just studying all the time, doing homework. And, you know, you could tell, like, a lot of these kids had, like, their really high averages. And they were, like, you know, they needed to do whatever they had to do to get into certain colleges. Mm-hmm. You know, I even heard, like, stories about some kids who, you know, you'd fail a test and they, like, wouldn't go home. I remember hearing that. It's like, you couldn't face your parents after that. I'm like, you know, I don't have that kind of thing. You know, I'm only half Asian, you know. So, you know, I have the thing where it's like, I go back. It's like, you got to do better, but I'm not getting the thing where it's like 99s. It's like, where the hell did that last point go? You know, the joke would be like, you know, if you were real Asian, we'd be like, you know, telling you where that last point go. But like 97, 90, it's like, all right, you know, you're doing fine here. This isn't an issue. You know, you're doing other things. It's okay. So, that was fun.
So, you know, you're referring to, I guess, the high proportion of students at Stuy who are Asian. So how did it feel to be a mixed heritage student, partially Asian, you know, attending Stuyvesant High School? And how did people approach you?
Well, I was always the other, you know, like the white kids, I was the white kids, I was like Asian, the Asian kids, I was white. Like my girlfriend at the time was Asian and she considered me as like her white boyfriend, like pretty much like, you know, like they were like really Asian. They do these things like, I just have no clue what they're doing. Like I know a little bit just cause you know, like I went to have dinner in Chinatown every once in a while with, you know, like the Chinese side of the family and just like there were other things and little things I'd kind of get, but I was like pretty much with me and my dad just like kind of like getting it in from the outside, just like sort of understanding what's going on a little bit, you know, can't speak the language, can't do anything. And so I'd go there and you know, it's like you just like, you're the white guy, like that's it, like you don't know any of this, it's like it's okay, you know, you don't, you're not expected to know. Well, at the same time, I guess like with some of the white kids, you know, it's kind of like kind of obvious that I'm like Asian, mm-hmm. especially since I look, you know, more Asian than I do white, which is sort of my thing, because like I know a lot of the half Asians I actually was good friends with looked very much more white than I do. Mm-hmm. My theory is because my dad's like Eastern European, as opposed to a lot of them who are more Western European, yeah. on the, you know, the white side or whatever the other side is. Mm-hmm. So that for me was, I don't know, it was nice though. You know, you can kind of like experience both sides, and it's, even though it's like it's fine though, it was good. Like, yeah, it's hard to explain, I guess.
Yeah, so I mean, did you learn to navigate your mixed heritage status from a young age? Was it something that was always obvious to you? Or?
Yeah, actually. In elementary school, I think I was the only mixed race kid in the whole school, which I just remember at one point, for some reason, I got to see like scores by race breakdown or whatever it was. Like there was some kind of like sheet that came out, like how the school was doing. And there was only like one kid who had checked the box of other, and his grade was exactly the same as mine. I'm like, oh, that has to be me. So, which, you know, and the other thing was, though, because I went to a very white elementary school because it was in Park Slope, they assumed, like, every Asian kid was related, and wasn't exactly wrong because many of them were. You know, there weren't that many. And so, like, I would sometimes get grouped, and it's like, oh, you relate to him, you're Asian. I'm just like, wait, but I go home, and I see my dad, and he's not Asian. Like, it's weird, but, like, they all assume I'm Asian, but at the same time, like, it's... I'm not exactly Asian. You know, I never, like, had, like, much in common with the other Asian kids there. You know, I was always had, like, a white friends in a very white school. It just seemed more natural to me anyway, but it was always, like, something was always, like, a little weird with that. So it was pretty obvious to me. And which I guess why, you know, being... why I guess I started the half-Asian club more than, you know, anyone else had really any inclination to do so, was because that, for me, seemed a little more obvious. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I seemed Asian, but at the same time, it really wasn't really true. So, you know, I'd said a few times, and everyone was really into it, but nobody really wanted to do it. Nobody cared enough to do it. And even at one point, like, I didn't really care enough for the most part. But then I had some time senior year. You know what? I was like, let's go for it. So that was one meeting, but it was nice.
So what did you guys discuss at this meeting?
Well, I had to get people to come. So I was like, okay, I made the club. It was final. I finally got a room, all this date. And I was like, how are you going to get people to come? How are you going to get people to come? You know, I talked to the other half Asians. They would just show up, just like humor me, just have a half Asian club. And he's like, you know, we'll talk about stuff. And they're like, what are we going to talk about? I always reminded my dad, like, what are we going to talk about at a half Asian club? You know, what issues? For him, you know, like, a lot of people, like, love, like, Hapas and half, you know, half Asians and all that other, like, it's like, oh, you guys have, like, bottles and all this stuff, and, like, it's, you know, there's, like, you have no real issue to talk about. You're white, you're Asian, you know, it's not, like, you've never had, like, a long history of, like, being persecuted or anything like that. It's not like you have any issues to talk about. Is it a culture club? You know, like, what kind of culture exactly are you going to have? Everyone's going to have all these different mixes, you know, all over the place. Like you have a French culture club, maybe a Spanish culture club. You don't have, like, a European culture club, really. It's, like, it's such a broad topic. How exactly do you approach it? And so I had to think about issues I was coming up with. And one of the ones was, like, recognition. Mm-hmm. It happens as, like, a separate group. And how we don't really even get that much. And I even branched off into mixed race in general. But it was really just going to be, like, half Asian. But I realized that, like, you know, mixed race in general is going to have the same issue. And one of the things is, like, you know, mixed race doesn't really get as much credit as it really should. Like, you think about all these guys. Like, you think Barack Obama's the first black president. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, he's the first mixed race president, right? Like, I think there's more in common with us than there is, like, you know, with just, like, you know, it's not really, like, full black. He's mixed race. That's how it is. You know, Tiger Woods, you know, people think of, like, greatest black golfer. He's mixed race. You know, I was like, we had this one half black, half Asian guy. I'm like, he's got more in common with you than he does with, like, you know, like, a full black guy. You know, he would have lived more with, you know, your kind of life. He would have been, like, seen different cultures, all this stuff. You know, that's probably one of the reasons he got into golf, you know, as opposed to other sports. It's just, like, the whole mixture of stuff. He just sees, you know, sports that you don't, like, tend to associate. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to be racist here, but, like, you know, you tend to, so, you know, you associate certain sports. Like, golf is generally, like, a very white sport. You really see him, like, doing a different sport, but because mixed race, because of the way everything went on, you know, he went with that. And so I kept going a lot of, like, recognition. You know, when you fill out a form, a lot of these forms recently, you know, will allow you to check two boxes, but, you know, a lot of time you just have to check other. And it's like, what exactly is other? You know, it's a very large growing population of half Asian. We're not exactly, like, other anymore. You know, it's like, you see others are, like, you know, maybe, you know, Inuits or some, just like some small group of people. It's like, they're just, I don't know, there's not enough space to make a box for each and every single one of them. But, like, half Asian is something, or, like, mixed race is, like, getting pretty big. That I always felt like it's just, recognition was really the main issue. But eventually it branched off, like, what are we going to do with the club? And at one point everyone wanted to get shirts and throw carnivals, and it would be like, you know, don't be sad, be happa. And just these puns on the word with, like, happy and half and all these other things, which was fun. Nothing ever came of the club, sadly. But, you know, we had actually a pretty good talk. People came up and they talked about their mixed race and how it affected them, and like, food. That was a big thing. Everyone's like, everyone had the same things with food. It's like, because generally the way it goes, at least recently, has always been like a white parent, Asian, I mean, a white father, Asian mother is generally, like, kind of, like, standard. And so everyone had, like, a mother who would take, like, some kind of white food and just do some kind of weird Asian twist to it, and it'd be amazing. You know, like mine was, my mom would take this kind of chicken that my grandmother on my dad's side would make, this kind of baked chicken, and she would just add these weird spices and sauces, and all of a sudden it goes from, like, it was a good chicken as it was, but it went from, like, sort of like a chicken and potatoes to, like, this just Asian fusion of, like, not really, like, of the chicken. And it's, like, everything was based around just, like, these spices in the chicken. It was, like, really good. And other people had similar things. Like, one of the guys who also talked about food was half English, half Thai. And he talked about how his mother would take, like, English food and, like, a fish and chips or something and do something, you know, interesting, like, really, really weird with it. And it just always come out really good. So that was a big topic about it, though. Everyone likes food.
Definitely. So I'm interested maybe in the story of how your parents did meet, because there are multiple ways that these mixed heritage families come about, and I'm sure maybe you know a little bit about how yours did.
Yeah, I do. I do, actually. They were neighbors in New Jersey, mm-hmm. and I mean, there's a long backstory to each one, but they both ended up in New Jersey somehow, and my dad actually... he tells it was really funny because my mom has these two sisters, and at the time, you know, they always make the joke, you know, all Asians look alike. And to him, he comes from a place where he hasn't really seen any, and so he can't tell the difference between any of them. And so he used to always, you know, he made the joke how they'd all be coming and going. You just have no idea which one he's talking to. And he just ended up with my mom at some point, and then I don't know, then I guess the rest is history. Then somehow they got married and had me. And they just kind of met in New Jersey as neighbors, the girl next door. He kind of puts it that way. And so it's not really like a big story. One of the stories was actually a good story. It was how my dad got into Asian food, well, Chinese food specifically, is like my aunt was like, we're going to get rid of this guy. Like this guy at the beginning, it's like, we're going to take him and give him some really Asian food. And he's just not going to do it. And then he's going to be it. He's going to be gone. Like the white guy's trying to be a part of it. And they took him in there. And they started ordering all these really weird foods. And he'd sort of had it before and never really liked it. Like, he had, like, fish before and all these other stuff. And so he was like, oh, no, they're ordering the really weird shit now. And he started eating it. And he's like, this stuff's amazing. And he's just loving it. And the two of them are looking at each other like, really? Wow. He's actually eating it. Okay, maybe it's not so bad. So that was a good story how, like, they just ordered stuff. And he's just like, ugh, no, I can't eat this. And he just started eating all of it, and they couldn't believe it. Just looking at him, like, "Wow, this white guy can eat Chinese food." Okay,
it's fine. Funny.
Yeah.
So, growing up, did your parents ever have discussions with you about, you know, where they're from? You said that your mother is Chinese by heritage, but was born in the Bronx, and your father is was born in Romania and is Jewish.
Yeah. My dad left Romania fairly early, though, and he moved around a while, and he spent a good amount of his time in Canada, especially, like he says, his more formative years. So for him, and he's a Canadian citizen, so for him, like, he's more Canadian than anything else. But one of the things is, I guess, when they left, and he came here, and he's like, there was a communist dictator at some point, and they had no love for that man. So he was very, you know, he's very, like, pro-America for that. So he wanted me to get into, like, American stuff, and same with my mother. She, you know, she wanted me, like, you have to be successful in America. They had the stereotypical hand laundry when she was a child. So the same thing. It's like, you know, you're in America, you have to be successful. You know, it's like, you know, failure, like, isn't really an option. And there's no reason for it either. You know, it's not like if I don't succeed, I'm going to have to fall back and just have to do nothing. You know, not do nothing but do, like, a minimum wage job or anything. You know, it's like, you know, they made sure I get through school, get through high school, a good high school, and all that stuff. And you know, it's like it's eventually on me to really go out and do as much as I can. And you know, for them, it's like America's the place where you can do that, where you can go from the hand laundry to my mom was a judge. You know, so it's like you can really just rise as high as you want to go. And that for them was very big compared to, you know, where they I guess they had come from.
So do you know the stories of, you know, maybe how your parents grew up in these different countries, Canada, the U.S., whatever interests you?
How they grew up? A bit. My, as I said, my mom went to, you know, she's school in the United States. She was actually also went to CUNY, as, you know, as I'm doing now. She had to work in the hand laundry, something she never wanted to do again. Wanted to make sure she got as far away from that as possible. Wanted to make sure I never had anything to do with that. My dad didn't have, you know, as difficult, I guess, a childhood. He bounced around. They were in Canada. My grandparents did well for themselves. So, he was okay. He went to school. Then he went to school, actually, in the United States for a little while. He bounced around a lot, you know. So, he talks about that. It wasn't really good for him, you know, just, like, always being in a new place all the time. But, you know, I guess he met some good people all over the place. And eventually, he kind of, like, I don't know. He was always bouncing around, really. That's really the big thing is he went, you know, Romania, Israel, Canada, United States, South Carolina at one point, back up to New York. He was in New Jersey. So he was always all over the place. And I guess that really more defines what he was doing than anything else.
So did you have the opportunity to travel to any of these places?
I went to China for 2 weeks, if I remember correctly, back the summer. Before or after freshman year? I think the summer after freshman year, spent 2 weeks in China, met some relatives. It was interesting with the relative situation is I only met relatives on my mom's side. Mm-hmm. They didn't really want to see the relatives on her dad's side. It's like a history with that. From what I at least understand, my grandfather would send back a lot of money to that family. They'd always be asking for money. And so, you know, it was a little resentment because, you know, it was kind of hard for my mom. But it didn't have to be as hard as it was because he kept sending money back to them. And they'd always keep asking for money. And so they really just didn't want to deal with them. But on my grandmother's side, they're very nice people. I found out a good amount of my, you know, family history, I guess. Met some, her brother, these other people. And see, I remember my dad used to show me slides of when he went and how different China is now. You know, it's like, we went to, like, you know, going with my family. They wanted to stay on, like, all the high-class hotels, eat all the really nice places. You know, it's like, it's vacation for us, you know. We're not going there to, like, live, you know, as they live. We want to live, you know, the five-star restaurants, you know. It's vacations. We're seeing family, but we're going to have a good time. And it was, we had a good time. We saw these interesting sights. We were quite clearly tourists, which was fun. But a lot had changed. And they show you some of the old things that still stood there from, like, the long history of China. But there's all the new stuff, and you could tell, like, in the cities how urban it was now. You know, how it was really just growing all of a sudden. And, they talk about being crowded. There were some very crowded areas, I gotta say. We took the train at one point to see, like, the countryside. And we got out of the train station. It was just, like, shoulder to shoulder with everybody. I'm like, wow, this place is packed. That was my experience. I never went to Romania. I was to Canada once. It was Halifax, which to me just struck me as just being like a part of America. Honestly, like, I just, there's not really a big difference between America and Canada from what I can tell.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the border's just there for like political reasons, I guess. But like for all like practical and all practicality, it's just like the same country. You know, they speak the same language. They have like the same accent, same dress. The only difference is, I guess, the French parts, but. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, I guess, is a little bit of a difference. But I guess we have, like, Spanish parts in the U.S., I guess you could say. So, I don't know. It just didn't seem that different at all, which, as I said, is, like, I guess more my dad grew up anyway. So, I don't know. For, like, heritage-wise, that was about it.
So, was there any specific memory that stuck out to you about your trip to China? Anything that maybe surprised you?
I mean, memory-wise, the water. Do not drink the water. That was, I don't know, I just remember at one point, I think I completely forgot, and I just drank the water, and it was really bad for the next few days.
Yeah.
Like, just, like, my stomach was killing me. I was just like, this is not good. Just, no, that was, like, that was one of the big things, because that lasted for a while during the trip. And so, I mean, there were, like, some great sites, like, the Great Wall was great, you know, there was, saw these markets, saw other, like, these landmarks, and just the whole of it was spectacular. But, you know, we'd see it, like, one day, we'd see, like, three different sites or something.
Right.
And, like, the only thing that really stuck with me for the whole trip was don't drink the water. You know, that was the big thing there. But, yeah, no, I mean, the rest of it was very interesting. Walking the Great Wall was nice, and all these tourist attractions, though. And yeah, I mean, meeting the family was nice.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand, like, what they were saying, but, like, I got some of it translated for me. And they were happy to see me, you know, to see a distant relative, I guess. And it was nice. It was good. I don't know. There really wasn't much else to say about that. We met them briefly, and the rest was just tourism.
Yeah. So I'm also interested in your college career, which you've begun earlier this year.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about what you're studying and where you're studying?
I'm doing the Macaulay Honors Program up at the City College of New York. I'm currently a biomedical engineering major. It's been interesting. You know, they came in, we had this whole seminar about, like, you know, don't succumb to Stuyvesant syndrome, which I thought was very funny coming from Stuyvesant. You know, as soon as she said it, I was like, rep and sty, let's go. You know, it's like, don't be lazy, and then, you know, then have to really work hard. And I'm like, nah, that's exactly what I'm going to do, though. Like, everyone that I ever met, no, not met, like, everyone from Stuyvesant, who had, like, gone off to college, and friends of mine, they'd come back, and it's like, oh, Stuyvesant makes everywhere easy. And people told me that before who had actually, like, graduated Stuy, like, you know, back in, like, the 80s or wherever. It'd be, like, just some people I'd met. Like, there's this one guy at the gym, actually, who also went to City College, but a long time before me. And, you know, he's like, you know, you're going to college now. It's a lot easier than Stuyvesant. You know, Stuyvesant makes sure you are ready for wherever you have to go. And I'm like, you know, okay. So I actually, for the first while, I found it where I could just, I didn't have to really do anything compared to Stuy. There's at one point I was doing, like, all my homeworks right in the morning, right before class. Mm-hmm. My greatest feat, I felt, was when I had no clue there was a paper due that, like, one of the days. And I had to call up, like, two of my friends. I'm like, we have a paper due today for this class? Like, I just found out, just, like, in this weird way. This one guy was just like, how long was your paper? And I was just like, what are you talking about? And I had to rush home, like, well, not home, I had to rush back to my dorm, like, an hour before class and just type up four pages, just print it, give it in. And it turned out I was, like, one of four A pluses in the class. And I was just like, Stuyvesant, yes, there we go. Nowhere else is going to teach you how to do that. You know, because, and the best part for me, too, was, the project that I had not done anything for the project because I didn't have the paper, so I had to write about things that I hadn't done, and so like just putting all together like all this stuff just between Wikipedia and Google and just trying to take everybody else's experiences I could grab and just throw it onto paper in like you know in a coherent manner and just like I was hoping just to get like a good enough grade. And it just turns out, like, I did well, and just, like, Stuyvesant, I don't have to do work now. But then, you know, things just, like, had, like, it was kind of steady, and it's like, okay, you know, there's some things you have to do, you just allot your time properly, especially once, like, baseball started picking up, and it's like, you gotta go to workouts, and then once, it's always been like that, once season starts, your time gets so structured. I mean, not really season, but even just, like, workouts or preseason, all that stuff, your time gets really structured, which is good. I always find I do better during season than, like, not during season, because of that. Yeah. You know, you don't have free time. It's like, oh, shit, where'd those, like, 6 hours go? Like, you know exactly where they went during seasons. Like, all right, 3 hours practice, then I have to do, like, my homework, maybe put an hour in study for a test, get a meal, go to bed, because then I got to get up the next day and I have to, like, run or do all these things I don't really want to do too much. But, you know, it's, but you do it because, you know, it's you love the game. You have to do it. And just, it helps, honestly. It really helps with school. Which, I don't know, seems kind of counterintuitive. Everyone's like, you know, you're playing sports, it takes up so much of your time. And it does, but it doesn't take as much of your time as, like, doing nothing. That takes up a lot of time. I mean, like, doing nothing isn't, like, staring at a wall, but you're, like, you're not really doing anything. You're just kind of, like, hanging out, which is good. And, it's good to be hanging out with friends. But, you realize it's, like, oh, my God, now I understand why everyone's scrambling for stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about how it felt to live outside of the home in a dorm, maybe for the first time?
First time. It was... I didn't really live out of the at the dorm as much as I wanted to. I kept going back to Park Slope on weekends to work in Prospect Park as a referee, which was, like, it was good, because, like, one of the things was, you know, I'm doing Macaulay. I'm trying to, like, to avoid spending... you know, my parents' money as much as possible right now. You know, I was like, you know, I could do this. You know, it's a bit of independence. I mean, I'm living away from home. Part of the reason is to just develop, like, independence. It's just, like, I can live without them. I can, like, feed myself, clean myself, you know, all that stuff. Like, you're doing it anyway, but just, like, prove a point. Like, this is how it's going to be from, like, now on. And so I was doing that. I was coming back. And then I'd stay at home during the time. And just, like, you know, it was good to be back to see me. Like, could do some work there, whatever else I was going to do. And it's because it's in New York City. It really isn't that bad. And I just head back up when I'm done with work. And, you know, I'd have the money for the week and, you know, go out into the city, which isn't something I had done as much coming from Brooklyn. Yeah. I go into, like, the northern parts of Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And it's been an interesting experience being in Manhattan compared to Brooklyn, I got to say. Everything seems really big, I got to say. Like, I don't know, I never really noticed that. I was like, I'm in New York City, like, it's fine. But it's, like, it's so different from Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Everything's, like, so much taller when you get to certain parts of New York. Like, just these huge buildings, like, all the way up. And just, like, all the flashing lights and all that stuff. It's, like, this is New York City. It's, like, everyone comes to see it. You know, not like, and people don't come to see Park Slope, Brooklyn. You know, they might see Prospect Park for a little bit. But, you know, you don't really come to see, there's not, like, that much that you're going to see as a tourist in Park Slope, Brooklyn. You can see residential, you can see some stores. And everything's, you know, a lot lower down. You've got maybe, like, your tallest building, six floors, mostly. Yeah, there's some taller, but not, you know, it's everything's much lower down as opposed to, like, the 40-foot, you know, 40-story high-rises and plus. I just remember one of them, I had an interview with one of them. I just remember looking up the building. I was like, this thing does not end. It's not even one of the taller buildings. It's so big. It's been a good experience just to get out, though.
So how did your parents handle you transitioning to college? Do you have any memories of, you know, what they told you, how they prepared you?
I mean, I don't know. They felt I was going to be fine, you know, coming from Stuyvesant. You know, preparation, I was doing Macaulay. Very happy about that. My dad was always been telling me to go to City College, go to City College, go to City College. And I don't know really why. He's just like, City College is like, it's very cheap. It's a great education, all this stuff. And then you do Macaulay and they give you money. It's great. You got to go for that. You know, you got to save all that money from like the other undergraduate. And so that to them was like, they were very happy about that. And, you know, and there was like, you know, you have to be prepared. College isn't school. And I'm like, listen, you got to stop saying that because everyone who comes from Stuyvesant says that college is very much easier than Stuyvesant. So yeah, you're right. College isn't Stuyvesant. It's easier. So I'll be fine. And eventually they just stopped. They're like, okay, you think you know, then you're going to get to college and then you're going to be surprised. And so now I've gotten to college, and I've been absolutely not surprised. Everyone's been right. You know, you go to college, and it's easier than Stuyvesant, which has been really, really nice, I have to say. Just a lot more time to do things that you kind of want, just go out and about, you know. I don't know, just whatever. It's been better. Like, you have everything done. It's no stress. You know, it's like, oh, I've got something to do tomorrow. I have to really, like, make sure I get everything done on certain days. It's just like, you know, I got my project. I've got maybe a test. That's all I really have to worry about. You know, we're like, in Stuyvesant, you have to do your homework, you have to show up to class, all this stuff. Now it's like, you have to do well on the test. And, you know, if you went to Stuyvesant, that's one thing you're really, really good at is taking tests. You know, that's how you get into the school. That's how you have, like, any average, really. You have to be good at taking tests throughout the whole time. You know, everyone has high SATs, everyone high ACTs, all the tests. And so taking tests has always been fine. And so a school that's like, you know, it's like, at least two of my classes were just 100% test-based. So I'm like, I don't even have to worry about those classes at all. Which was very nice to have classes you just don't have to worry about.
So, you mentioned that you have a bit more free time as you're in college. What have you been doing with this free time?
Well, at the beginning of the year, I was going out a lot before baseball kind of started for fall ball. I was going out, like, a lot, which wasn't good, I gotta say. Looking back, like, I went through a lot of money. Going out in the city is not cheap at all. Oh, no. No, not at all. It's just, it was fun, I gotta say. It's just definitely good to have that time going out. And then I don't know, I find I'm putting a lot more, trying to get back to working out a lot more. You know, I was always working out with the style, you know, with the baseball team, football team. And now there's no football team there, so it's just baseball. So I'm trying to, like, I need the more of a commitment to try to, like, working out. So with the free time I do that, I mean, I still go out enough, which is good. But definitely it's you know, I'm cutting back on that. There's also, like, the money issue, where it's just, like, I realized at one point where I was just, like, putting more money in, and I'm like, no, this is going to go by so fast. I don't want to do this. So, yeah, more free time. Like, I'm going to try to see more events also with the free time. The first year, you know, when everything kind of got steady, with it was working out, doing the kind of some work I had to do. And, yeah, I'd go out every once in a while, which was, you know, I had my schedule down. And I did have enough time to see a few events, which was nice. And the one thing was the Mocha event, I have to say, which was the Kip Fullbeck and Kent Tanabe, which, you know, things like that. You can just go out, and if there's something in the city that you want to see or do, it's been good to have that. And I'm definitely going to try to go to more Macaulay events, because they actually have events specifically for Macaulay. And I hadn't gone to many of them. They really weren't that interesting to me at the time, like a lot of these art stuff. And, you know, it's just, as an engineer, it's not... something I'm spending so much time on. I've never been really... I mean, I've done some art stuff, but it's never really been that big for me. So I just really had no inclination to go into this, you know, down there from Harlem. You know, it's kind of, like, out of the way. So I always have to think to myself, like, I got to get there, I got to get back, and how much do I really want to do that? But, yeah, it's been a good way to spend extra time. It's nice to have it and just go see things that before I hadn't really seen much of.
So you keep describing how baseball is a really big passion in your life. It's remained a significant, you know, activity.
Luckily, yeah.
So
it's been fun.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about the feeling of playing the game, what it's like to be, you know, at practice, during, you know, at bat during the game. You know, I'd love to hear a few details about how it feels.
Okay. I'm a pitcher, so I'm a pitcher / like designated hitter. It's kind of interesting, because one of the things that I never learned where I played baseball is how to field a ball properly. It's just not something that anyone could do in the league that I played in. But I could throw pretty well, and I could hit very well. And those are two things that actually, like, translated into, like, higher level ball, where I could do that, but it came clear that I wasn't going to play the field at all. So a lot of the time, at practices for me at least, like, everyone's doing, like, fielding and all this other stuff. You know, I might be helping out with the pitchers, kind of just, like, doing what pitchers do, which during practice, sadly, isn't very much. You know, if you've thrown your bullpen, if you've done your pitching, you know, you do a lot of running and you help everyone else practice. And sometimes just because I can hit, I get to take like cuts off to the side where other pitchers don't, which has been nice. It's been nice where like you see a lot of these guys just kind of like standing around doing their running. Sometimes they leave. Sometimes they left early, but I'd say they would take my cuts, and that was always a little different. I gotta say, for me at least, it always felt kind of different, just not being like a normal baseball skill set where you just generally don't see like pitchers who hit. You see them like hit pitch and field, you know, and the guys who are hitting generally aren't pitchers. So that was always nice. I don't know. I always felt like mixed, you know. It's very strange. Like, mixed always seems to play a big part in things that I do for some reason. I don't know if just the way everything turned out or just baseball for me was like that, or in practices. But in the game, the game was very different. Like, I got the pitch and DH both, which was nice. I did that. Hitting, you want to know about hitting. Hitting is, I don't know, there's... When you're in, like, a hot streak or when you're in a slump, you feel it. And you know exactly that you're in a slump or you're in a hot streak. And, you know, when you're, like, slumping, let's say, like, you just feel, like, you feel kind of, like, nervous. You know, you feel maybe a little scared. Like, you just, like, the ball's coming in. For some reason, it always seems faster. For some reason, the movement always seems more. You know, the change of speeds always seems to get you. You know, the location is never where you want it. And you just don't really understand why. And then you kind of know you're in a slump. And it's always like just nagging at you, like you're in a slump. Ah, you gotta break out. You know, the pressure's on you. And you're on a hot streak though. There's no pressure at all, which is absolutely wonderful feeling. Just go up there, and even like you have an 0-2 count, you know, like two strikes, and you're just thinking like, you know, it's the worst position to be for a hitter. And you're just thinking like, this doesn't matter. Like, it's okay. Like, he's just gonna put another ball over the plate sometime because he's gonna have to throw me a strike. You know, he's the pitcher. That's his job, is to throw me a strike at some point. You know, hopefully it's a strike he thinks he can't. That I won't be able to hit, but like it'll have to be in the strike zone, which means I'll be able to hit it. And you're in a hot streak, you're like, yeah, just give that to me, I'm just gonna hit it. And it's such a nice feeling, I have to say. Like, when you're doing well at things, generally it's a nice feeling, but especially hitting, because, you know, you're expected to fail most of the time when you're hitting. Like, not strike out, but like fail, you know, to not reach base. And you're just on a hot streak, you just feel like you just can't fail. And even like when you know, you don't make it to first base, usually it's like you hit a line drive somewhere, like right at a guy, and it's just like, you know, it's like, okay, you got lucky, not me. You know, it's like, I'm going to hit your stuff, and it's a great feeling, I have to say.
So, in addition to being a player and having all of this experience and, you know, these two different sports, you mentioned that you're also a referee.
Yeah.
So, how is that experience? The same? Different?
It's been a lot of fun, too, I gotta say. It's different, but it's... You know, when you're around sports, I guess, a lot, you like to watch sports, play sports, talk about it. It's just like another place where you're just surrounded by everyone who likes, you know, other referees. You have a game, and sometimes, like, the kids are, like, sometimes really good, and it'll be, like, a great game, and you're like, wow, like, you're really glad to do it, because, like, you're watching the game at the same time. You know, sometimes you'll see, like, a really bad game, or all the coaches are in your ear, and you kind of, like, for me, like, the kind of joke is, like, when it deals with, you know, dealing with people, it's like, oh, referees are great if you're, you know, it makes you really good at dealing with people because you have to deal where everybody is hostile to you.
Yep.
Like, everybody. It's sometimes, I mean, it's not exactly true. There's some people who, you know, they get to know you, like you, and especially if you're a good ref. Generally, the better teams, you know, they'll come to like the refs a lot. You know, it's like, oh, he's a good guy. You know, he's pretty fair. Yeah, he knows what he's doing. He'll keep the game from, like, getting out of hand or any of that. Or some of the, like, worst teams, they want to blame anybody but the, you know, like, that they're just not as good. You know, it's sorry to say that. It's like, some of these teams aren't good. And, you know, you're the main target for that. It's like, you blew that call. It's like, we should have been doing this. It's like, but no, I'm sorry. You know, from my perspective, it's like, no. And you have to, like, you know, you kind of talk to them. It's like, no, that's not what happened. I'm sorry. Like, I understand you're frustrated, but, like, you know, there's one moment this one coach really didn't like a call I had. He was this really big guy. He's up in my face about it. Me and the other ref, because we worked together too. And he's yelling and screaming. And, like, we explained to him the call, and he's just, like, still arguing with me, like, no, this is the call, this is how we both saw it, we talked over this, like, this is definitely how it went down. And eventually, like, he's screaming, kicking on the side. And at the end of it, though, like, a lot of these guys are really good. Like, he came back, he's like, you know, sorry to get in your face about that, you know, heat of the moment, like, it's okay. Especially, like, he's like, you know, you guys were actually probably right, but, you know, like, I'm not entirely sure, you know, I'm going to have to try to get my calls my way. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's good, it's fine. It's also, like, a really good experience, I have to say.
So, I'd love to hear, it sounds like you have a really nice relationship with your parents, and, you know, I'd love to hear a little bit more about it.
More about it. Let's see. I don't really know where to go with that, honestly. Just like a relationship with the parents. They're my parents. For most of my life, I lived with them. You know, I honestly don't really know what else to say. Like, I don't know if it's like anything interesting or new or weird. I mean, they always had me doing like extracurricular things, I guess. Like, all the time. Like, I remember I used to play chess. For some reason, I played the piano. What else? Yeah, and then there's sports. They always took me out for that. That was, for some reason, I guess, big for them. I guess one of the things I just stuck with because, I don't know, I've always, you know, had fun. I've always been pretty good, you know, so it was never, like, frustrating for me. None of it really was, but sometimes, some things, like, I don't know, like, I didn't really enjoy the piano as much. You know, I don't know. It just, there was never, like, feedback from it. It was, I never felt like there was a good reason to do it. You know, I never saw, like, I was like, okay, I play the piano. That's something I do on my own. That's, like, a side little hobby thing that I didn't really pick up for myself, you know? It's not like it's something I was doing with other people. Where sports, you know, you can tell, like, you won. It's like, yes, there you go. It's like, you and your guys, you had fun, you won. It's a good time, or you lost. It's like, now you have to strive to get better. You know, you come back next time, you try to, you know, you play a game. There's always something, like, instantaneous about that, which, I don't know, like I said, at a younger age, you kind of need that. You know, you don't really see it. Like, because now I have a lot of friends who, like, play guitar, and they, like, really love it, and they play guitar with each other and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, I could really get into that. Like I ended up playing the bassoon at Stuyvesant. And I actually, like, I was thinking, like, you know, I kind of did it just to, like, get out of certain classes at Stuy.
But strategic.
Now, yeah. It's like, I didn't have to do anything. I just kind of sat down, blew in a bassoon for a while, and then just, like, went to my next class. But, you know, it was a nice time. I played some, like, fun pieces with a band. And now, you know, I'm here. Like, a lot of people are trying to, like, play instruments, do all this stuff. And I realized, like, hey, you know, like, there's a friend of mine, actually. Like, if I can somehow get a bassoon from the school, like, we want to try doing, like, play a piece with the two of us or maybe somebody else if they want to join us. And it could be, you know, it could be pretty nice. You just, like, I don't know, just do it with people. And you can see how it could be fun. But at the time, it wasn't good. So, back to, like, relationship with the parents, I just still don't really see where to go with that, though. You know, I don't know. I never spent, like really extended periods of time with them, I guess. Like, I mean, I did. I lived with them. I had things to do. They took me there, talked to them. But, I don't know, nothing really, like, ever, like, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like something to really go from. Like, I'm sorry, I just don't really have anything else to really say about it.
Yeah, well, you already spoke at length about them. But I'm really interested in, you know, you discuss a lot about how you've gone about, you know, selecting your activities, the things that you like and why you enjoy them. And in college, you've decided to become a biomedical engineer.
Yeah.
So how did you go about making that decision?
Well, I guess the big decision, well, there are two. One, I knew I was going to have to do engineering coming in. Because one, at Stuyvesant, my course selection, things I was good at, was always like math, science, that kind of stuff. Like, I always did really well in those with very little effort, you know. So that I knew was going to be like engineering or science or any of that other stuff. And I don't know, I didn't really want to stick with one science. You know, it's very broad. Like, I never like found like, I want to do physics or I want to do biology or I actually want to study math. Like, it was always kind of like a general, like, I'm good at these things. I'm probably going to have to keep going with it. And for me, engineering just seemed like the right way to go because I was like building things too, which I guess is like, I don't know, architecture or whatever it is. You know, like, I played, like, these games where it's, like, you know, playing with Legos, all this stuff. So, like, building things is always fun. So it's, like, taking them apart, but that's always fun, destroying things, right, too. But, I don't know, so engineering seemed like a normal fit. I just had no idea what to do with that. And then I just saw biomedical engineering, and it sounded really, really cool. Just, I don't know, biomedical. Just more syllables than all the other engineerings.
Well, definitely does.
Right? So that was actually the only reason I chose biomedical out of all of them, because otherwise it was going to be like general engineering. It was like biomedical, and I started looking into it, and all of a sudden I'm like, wow, I made the right choice. This is really, like, I'm really happy about this, because I find out, like, City College is a big biomedical, like, I don't know, like, program there. It's in this new field that, like, it's just, like, parts of all these other fields. I'm like, this is exactly the kind of thing I was looking to do. This is wonderful. So that was definitely a good choice for me. I've been enjoying that. I've actually not even taken technically a biomedical course yet, biomedical engineering course. I'm taking that this coming semester. And I'm hoping it'll be really fun because I had an engineering course and that was a lot of fun.
So college is, it's a very formative time in a lot of people's lives, and sometimes people take time to reflect on their earlier memories at this point in their life. So are there any really early memories that you think made an impact on who you find yourself to be now or who you'd like to be in the future?
I don't know if it was, like, really any one moment that did it. You know, like, I like to say, like, football at Stuyvesant had a huge impact on developing. Because just coming from, like, Park Slope, you know, where things seem to come very easily, you know, when you're from Park Slope. Well, in football, it just, nothing comes easy at all. Mm-hmm. You know, especially Stuyvesant, you just not, it doesn't have, like, a history of, like, a very strong program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you come in there, it's like, we have to prove that we're a strong team. And luckily, my year, we did that. We actually, you know, I think we were 6-4, you know, like, so, you know, we finally, you know, we're over 500, which we hadn't done for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And before that, we hadn't done for, like, a while. So, you know, just coming, like, having to fight for everything. You don't expect to just get wins. You don't expect to just get anything. You don't expect to just, like, you know, just get playtime, any of this stuff. And just having to really understand that you want something, you have to go get it. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, like, where I'd kind of been before, like, with elementary school. Just, it kind of comes easy. It's like, oh, I need a high grade. Let me just go to class. Then I'll be, you know, you have to go to class. It's not even, like, let me go to class. Like, I'm in class. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to get a high grade. Like, just, it's just like it's expected, and you just learn not to expect anything, which I think has been a very good thing to have. Yeah. Other formative. It's just other experiences. Middle school was another one, just having to do with, like, understanding how to do schoolwork properly. Mm-hmm. You know, like, coming to Stuyvesant just wasn't a big shock because I'd figured that out in middle school. You know, the first year, I was just doing really, really badly. And then I finally, like, you know, and then it just comes to me. It's like, oh, okay, now I can do it. Because now you're just used to it. It's like, oh, I get it. Now I have to work. I have to, like, do homework. I have to maybe study for a test. Though, I don't know. I like to pride myself in style that I never actually had to study for a test, which was nice. But everyone's studying. It's like, oh, I spent all this time studying. I'm like, I don't spend any time studying. Like, if my theory was, if I haven't learned it in class, I'm not going to learn it on my own, in, like, 3 hours before the test. So what's the point in cramming or studying or any of that stuff? Like, let me just make sure I learned it in class. Or if not, then I just fail the test. You know, it's not a big deal. And so, you know, luckily for me, I never really failed that many tests. Failed a lot of quizzes. Didn't fail that many tests. Because it stuck with me. I'm like, I don't want to read a book. I'll just spark note it later. You know, same kind of thing. It's just like, if you're not getting it quickly, it's not as important, I guess.
So, as a member of the football team, how did you feel people approached you?
I don't know. It became less and less of an issue, really, as it was in Stuy. It was just, yeah, it really just like, oh, you're on the football team. That's cool. And, you know, like, we try to get people to come, and, you know, you want to make a point, like, you're on the football team, and people know. But, like, it and, you know, it's just, it has to do with, like, some of the people who you're closer with. And so, you know, when you're with people who are on the football team, it's like, oh, I'm on the football team. It's like, yeah, I know, I'm there with you. You know, so it's not really, like, an issue, really. It's just, I don't know. Like, at the beginning, you want to be like, yeah, I'm on the high school football team. You know, sort of how, like, I guess in the same way now, it's like, yeah, I'm on the college baseball team, that kind of thing. You're, like, kind of, like, happy. Like, yeah, I made the school team. Like, it's good. But then you realize it's just, like, less and less of just, like, important to who you are, how people see you. It's just, like, what do you do? You know, what kind of person you are? You know, that's generally much more important than just, like, yeah, I'm on the teams. So, yeah, I have to say that was probably it. Like, because, I mean, I guess the same way, it's, like, people who are on, like, robotics or other things, like, yeah, I'm robotics or that. But then again, I don't think they really did. I know as many people in robotics. Actually, that was interesting. I knew people, and it just turned out they're on robotics, but I had no idea. It's like, oh, you're robotics. Oh, I just didn't see you doing robotics at all. It's like, yeah, no, I do robotics. It's like them. It's just not a big issue. You know, they don't just like, oh, I'm on robotics, yeah. But it's also a little different, I guess. I don't know if they have, like, cuts or anything. Like, I don't know. I feel like that's something that changes the game, kind of, like, whether or not a program is cuts. Uh-huh. Like, you did the standard, right? Like, you guys didn't, like, did you guys cut people? Like, did people, like, try to write for you, and you're just like, no, you can't write?
Well, actually, we occasionally cut people if they weren't keeping up with themselves, but we like to train them to sort of get in the game, I guess, sort of the same as the football team. Was it walk-on, or?
Yeah, the football team was walk-on, mostly. Baseball team wasn't as much. Yeah, people got cut from there, getting more and more so, gotta say, which is good for the program. It's getting really big, which is nice. Because I still talk to the coach. I go back because I'm still in the city, so I see whether mm-hmm. come back every once in a while, practice with them, see some friends on the team still, and it's getting bigger, which is definitely good for the future of this team. Which is kind of strange, because like one of the things is like the baseball team was always kind of like white, and just the Stuyvesant's getting so much more Asian. Like it's so much more now. Like back when you went, it was probably like under 60% maybe, and now it's over 70%, like well over. It's just like, yeah, you know, it's just the makeup of the school, the tendencies. It's just it's surprising that the team's getting so much bigger than it was.
So why do you think that is? Why do you think the school is becoming more Asian? Some teams are becoming more Asian.
I have no idea, honestly. Like, are there just more Asians in New York City now? I don't know. I really don't. One thing I heard, actually, I might be a cause, I guess, is a friend of my dad's, he's out in Queens, mm-hmm. big Asian community, and for some reason, it has to go with, like, the colleges and all this stuff, like, and it's kind of, like, trickling down even to high schools, I guess, where they just haven't, they don't want to take so many Asians anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh, if you're looking at, like, high grades, if that's your standard, you know, they tend to have, you know, the cram school, Saturday school, Sunday school, all this stuff. So they always have, do really well in school, have their high grades, and they just don't want to take all of them. And so all these kids are not getting into these high schools, these normal high schools they want to get into. They're, like, more selective, and they feel it's pressure because of race. They're all just coming into the specialized high schools where yeah. they don't have a selection process. It's strictly the test, and if you do well on the test, you're getting in. So now I guess they're doing well enough on the test. It's like, hey, we got into Stuyvesant. How are we not getting into the school? So like, you know, screw you, we're going to Stuyvesant. And so I think that could be one of the reasons, but that's just like hearing things, and just I really have no idea other than that.
So a lot of times when people discuss their heritage, they might connect to members of their extended family. So do you find yourself particularly close to any member of your extended family? Or are there any memories of, you know, discussions that you've had with them or time that you've spent that particularly stick out to you?
I mean, we were always closer on my mom's side just because of distance. Mm-hmm. They're in New Jersey. My dad's side is in Pittsburgh. Yeah. Though I did spend a good amount of time in Pittsburgh. Go Steelers. kind of upset about that last game. But, so, I don't know. I don't know, closer. You know, yeah, I guess closer. Spent a lot of time with my aunt. Thanksgiving. They came over to New York, Brooklyn for Christmas. I don't know if any moment that really stands out. But, I mean, I just closest ties, I guess, with them. Yeah. About it.
So I'm curious, do you celebrate multiple different holidays? One, two, you know?
I don't know if we really celebrate them as opposed to using it as an excuse to, like, celebrate in general. It's like, oh, it's Christmas, let's have a dinner. Let's have a big party. Oh, it's Thanksgiving, let's have a big dinner. Like, it's not, it's just to do it. Oh, it's New Year's, let's go to a party. You know, something like that. It's not like, oh, it's Chinese New Year's, like, let's have another party. It's like, we're not so, like, strict about it. You know, my dad comes to it, it's like, oh, Chinese New Year. You know, it's like, it's not really mean anything for me, but you know what? Time to eat. You know, it's just more of, like, reasons to celebrate than like, you celebrate the actual holiday itself.
So do you have any religious, specific religious affiliation, or?
Not really, I gotta say, no. From what I kind of know is, like, my grandmother, my mom's side, I believe, is Buddhist. But, you know, my mom didn't want to stand out, you know, when she was, you know, she was going to school in the Bronx, and, you know, she was, like, the only Asian girl in, like, the whole school. It's like, oh, you know, I'm whatever religion you are, you know, pretty much. Like, she has no idea. She's like, just doesn't want to stand out, uh-huh. you know, that much. You know, like, she tells a story of how, like, it came to, like, oh, what'd you have for dinner last night? And she doesn't want to say, like, these weird foods that she had for dinner. So it'd be, like, peas and carrots and some of this stuff. It's just not something that doesn't seem that strange. Where are we going from this? Where's this come from again?
Religious affiliation.
Right. I think technically, my dad's Jewish, though they are not observant at all on that side of the family. So it's really hard to say much about that. That's about all I got from there. Yeah, religion has not played a big role in our lives.
Yeah. So I'm definitely interested in finding out what your plans or expectations for the future might be. Mm. For yourself, for your family, for the world.
It's big expectations. Mostly for myself right now. It's just getting myself through through undergraduate college, you know, just get out of there, maybe get into a graduate program, maybe find some kind of work, and I don't know, figure out something from there, you know, baby steps right now, baby steps. I don't really have, like, a big plan. You know, people ask me, like, career-wise, all this, what are you going to do with biomedical engineering? I'm like, I don't know. You know, it's biomedical engineering. It's, like, I feel like I can go anywhere with that, right? I mean, it's, I don't know, people need doctors, I guess, all the time. People keep getting sick, so there's always something in biomedical engineering if I choose to stay with that. Or it's engineering, and aren't that many engineers in the U.S. that much, you know. So, I don't know, I just feel like there'll be something available coming out with this. So I just have to make sure I have to come out with it.
Well, Alexander, Alex, whatever we call you.
Yeah, that's fine, either way.
This has been a wonderful interview. I really appreciate you, you know, giving your voice to this project. Are there any final things that you'd like to say?
Final things? I don't know. This was nice, I gotta say. I don't know. It's, for some reason, I was expecting maybe a little more on the mixed heritage thing. I don't know. Then again, I don't know what else, how much more I'm going to say on that. You know, I was just thinking, like, hopefully it'd be, like, I don't know, it's just how that would be kind of, like, if that played a big role in my life. Just because, I don't know, it's just stories of, like, me with other mixed kids and just my impressions of them.
Yeah.
As I said, maybe, like, I have to tend to just feel like they're kind of lazy all the time. Like, we're lazy. But, like, it's fine, though. It's not like we just, like, sit around and do nothing. It's just, like, I think it's good, honestly, that we're lazy. Because some of the things that we do, it's just my tendency. I had projects with some of the other half-Asians. And it's just, like, how to get it done without doing anything. And you just come up with these really weird, funny ways of doing things. It's like save time, cut corners. And I remember I was telling you about Dr. Lee. I had this one project that's not an half Asian. Our joke was how between the two of us, there should be an Asian who'll do all the work. And just comes out to like the day beforehand, we have nothing. We're like, are we going to do anything? And we're just like, no. So we just come into class and we just bullshit the whole presentation. And at one point, me and him like just have like this connection. It's like, you know what we're going to end up doing? We're going to draw a giant penis on the board and get away with it. And that's what we do, because at this point, we have nothing, so, like, why not do it? And so we just draw it and say, like, and we draw it, like, in sections, and we say, like, each section is a part of the project.
Oh,
and goodness. And at one point, like, then Dr. Lee's just there clapping. He's like, yeah, this is a good presentation, because we sounded like we knew what we were talking about. And we just, this giant penis on the board, and me and him just are, like, trying not to just die laughing. And we're like, because like, we had nothing to give him. And, like, and I think, and a lot of people realized it, but, like, we just presented it in a way that it seemed like we did. And I don't know, it's always seemed to be, like, a good thing. It's just, like, just not want to do it. Like, the other thing with, like, the half-Asian club, where, like, nobody wanted to make it. It's like, oh, we have the half-Asian club. It's like, if you make it, I guess I'll show up once, maybe. Just completely, total non-committal. And I remember saying, it's like, at the club, you know, for some reason, it came up, you know, it's like, you just tend to, like, not put in, like, 100% effort with all this stuff. But it's just, like, it always seems to work out. You know, as long as you kind of, like, what you need to do and make sure that it gets done. And just in a least effort way, you can just come with, like, fun things that happen.
Yeah.
It's been, I don't know, my experience with mixed race kids.
So you explained this similarity that you seem to
yeah,
see.
Yeah, there are a few other ones. The other one I always like to say is that, like, people who for some reason will get, like, you know, interact with other half-Asian or mixed race, it's like, and things will happen, and like, my explanation will be, it's like, you don't understand why it's happening, it's like, I do, it's because they're mixed race. Like, what do you mean? It's like, just trust me on this. Like, you have no understanding of, like, what's going on. It's like, it's totally crazy. It's like, they're all crazy, don't worry. Like, there's this one girl, actually, I don't know, she's mixed race, I've just been hearing about her, she goes to a different school. So many people talking, it's like, oh, she's crazy. I'm like, what else are you going to expect? It's just like, for me, it's just like, they always have little quirky parts to it. Sometimes, I mean, not always, like, there's a good friend of mine, half Asian, he's just like, he's just a great guy, you know, and he's just like, is no real, like, craziness, I guess. He's like, he's just like a good guy, and he's like, for me, he's just like the exception, not the rule, because like the guy I did the project with was also, he's just like a crazy guy, and that's why we just had a connection, just like, let's do something like completely ridiculous, because like, why not, you know? And just that's how it's always been for me.
So the story that you discussed about your presentation for, yeah, Dr. Lee in your chemistry class,
yeah,
very interesting. Anything similar, any other experiences that you've had with these like, other mixed race friends of yours?
I mean, it was that one kid, I gotta say, because we had a couple projects in the same class, because it's like, oh, we're mixed race, let's just do things and it'll be fun. And so we just had what else is there? I don't know, I just always had the feeling, like, every time I talked to him or did anything, I would always hear, like, you know, hear people's other opinions on other half Asians. But yeah, what did we have? We had, I don't know, we kept messing around in that class. I gotta say, we kept screwing with everybody else in that class during their presentations as well. Or just anything they were doing, we'd just completely screw with them or the teacher, just like say these things that just seemed smart but had no meaning behind them. you know, at one point they were talking. These people were talking about this mechanical pencil, and we just kept making these like really dirty jokes the whole time. And like again, like some people got it, and other people were just like, "What are these guys saying? Like, it doesn't make any sense." And just us too. Like, and it wasn't even like planned. Like, we both just started doing it, and we had no reason to do it other than like we just felt like doing it. And there's just been other, I don't know, other times, just the impression I've been getting. You know, people, you know, you don't want to be like racist or anything, all that, but you know, you always seem to get an impression of like culturally or like types of people. And the thing is, like, when you are mixed race, you know, even if you come from different cultures, it's just like you understand like the just the way it kind of comes together. Not always like a culture clash, but like just the way they kind of like try to mix. Uh-huh. And you know, you're kind of like the binding point, and it's just always like these really weird things that happen. So you know, the way you react to it is fairly similar. Which is why, like, the whole mixed race, the whole half Asian club, which turned into more mixed race, I feel like, you know, we could even have a club, or we could even have a first meeting that went as well as it did. Because, you know, we actually, turns out, hey, we actually do have things to talk about. Like, who knew? You know, as I said, like, my dad just like, what are you going to talk about? And other people, like, what kind of issues do you guys have? Like, there's no issues. You guys have, like, nothing here. It's fine. So that was, oh, yeah, so going back to stories about that was also how I ended up actually at Mocha and seeing Kip Fulbeck and Ken Tanabe was because James Morrissey put, I think I told you maybe before the interview, James Morrissey posted the thing on Facebook and went to that and went to the whole thing and seeing like, oh, he's got issues, like he's talking about these whole things too. And it goes much deeper because the issues that I talked about are like being like somewhat resolved now, like for him, you know, with the whole loving day with Ken, you know, it's like mixed race wasn't even allowed to happen for a while, mm-hmm. you know, so now all of a sudden it's happening all over the place, you know, you see it all the time. And just like all these other, and you know, like who do you relate to? Who do you look up to? You know, like, you know, you're gonna look up to his mixed race, and the one of the things with like, there's no recognition. You know, you see someone like, oh, was it Bruce Lee? I remember finding out he's mixed race. And I was like, everyone assumes he's like this Asian martial artist. Like, no, he's mixed race. But you know, he's a quarter German, right? You don't have to be straight half. It's any mixed race. He's just, you know, things like that. It's like, oh wow, now you know, you start to find out these things that just were never there before. You know, just even the role model issue, just something there. Like, who else was it? I think Keanu Reeves. I think he's mixed too, which is my theory why he doesn't seem to age ever, right? Like you look at him now, and the way he's in the Matrix, he just looks exactly the same. Or like Bill and Ted, it's because that like Asian part in him is just keeping him from aging at all. So that's, I don't know, it starts popping up, and there's just all these other things you sort of find out as you get more active. And that's why, like after I had the club and I went to the meeting, I'm like, wow, you know, these things really, they're out there, and just for some reason we don't get as much recognition for it. And it's hard to always look up. And I remember Ken was talking. Especially his time, he had nobody to look up to, and for some reason he found it in Disney characters. He had this whole little slide, which was really fun to watch. How he's like, oh, I look like every single Disney character. These like ethnically ambiguous characters look like him. You know, it's like you could tell, like, you know, he'd been in the sun, so he looks like slightly darker characters. When he hasn't been in the sun as much, you know, the lighter, somewhat ethnically or racially ambiguous characters. Oh. And so, it's something that's, I don't know. I feel like it's gonna, for some reason, just play a larger part as like people, as just mixed race just keeps happening more and more, you know, especially in the United States, a big melting pot. The you know, the racial breakdown of the U.S. is changing greatly. It's just something that's definitely going to be out there and be an issue. And I don't know, just be on this is sort of like the ground floor of this thing. I think it's gonna be big, hopefully. This is my final thoughts on the issue.
Your final thoughts on the issue?
Yeah, I mean, unless there's something else. No, want to hear about that, I think.
Sounds really great. Well, thank you so much for offering your story. It's been very interesting.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Alexander.